This is Catherine O'Connell and welcome to Lawyer on Air. If you are looking for inspirational stories about women in law, then this is the podcast for you. Join me and my lawyer ladies as we enjoy a glass of wine after a hard day at work and talk about the world of women in law. It's my passion to share stories of amazing legal ladies who are working as in-house legal counsel, who have law firm roles, who are leading on boards, and who are doing law differently. From time to time, I will also invite special guests on the show to share their insights on legal recruiting and tips for getting hired as a successful lawyer in Japan. I hope you will enjoy getting to know these amazing women who I am so proud to share a profession with. I'm glad you're here and I hope you enjoy the show. Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of the Lawyer on Air podcast. I'm the host of the show, Catherine O'Connell. In this podcast episode, I share with you another diverse story of a woman lawyer working in Japan. What I've learned from my career in law so far is don't just ask questions, come armed with solutions. Well, those are the words of Andrea Sanada Ng, who is my guest today on the Lawyer on Air podcast. Andrea is an associate at K&L Gates in the Mergers and Acquisitions Practice Group. She was born and raised in Toronto, Canada, and completed her Bachelor of Arts Honours in Political Science from the University of Western Ontario and earned her Juris Doctorate from Michigan State University College of Law, and then was admitted to the New York Bar in 2017. You can check out Andrea's full bio in the show notes. On this episode, Andrea shares how, after some twists and turns, she went about securing an in-house position, eventually landing a very cool job at Sega Sammy Holdings, who are one of Japan's biggest entertainment and gaming companies. You'll hear how, after 4 years as an in-house legal counsel and concentrating on commercial contracts and intellectual property, Andrea then decided to make the jump into big law and joined K&L Gates in February 2022. How exactly did she do that? Well, she shares the way she did. So you too can do it if you are thinking of being brave and adventurous, jumping from in-house back to big law. You'll also hear how passion for pro bono and volunteer work is a driving force for Andrea, stemming from a comment from her mum when she was a young kid. And Andrea also shares her hot tips on food, travel, and all things Japan that she loves, as well as other fun facts. Well, here goes. Hello, Andrea, and welcome to the show.
Hello, Catherine. Thank you for having me.
So glad you're here. Let's start with our opening question, which is, if we were meeting up in person for a nomikai or drinks, where would we be? Do you have a favorite wine bar or restaurant you love to go to? And what would be your choice of beverage off the menu?
Ooh, that's a hard one. You know, with it really is. I mean, especially with the last 3 years, I've generally been meeting everyone for breakfasts.
That's a good idea. Yes.
Yeah, just because like things are not open as late, you know, previously Japan had limited opening hours. But prior to that, I probably would defer to your choice of a place, and my choice of drink would just be a gin and tonic.
Do you like the old, old type of gin, the traditional sort of gin, or do you like that new sort of herby boutique-y kind of gin? What do you like?
I actually like the traditional type of gin.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, the new, like the craft gin that's really popular in Japan. Yes. They're really nice, but a little bit too fruity.
I see. So, you like a more of a dry, traditional gin.
Yes. Got it. Yes.
Ah, interesting. Okay. Well, we can find a place to do that. Let's try and do that as soon as we can in the coming months. That would be great.
Yes, we should.
Yeah, or breakfast. I'm up for breakfast too. But no gin at breakfast. No. All right, well, let's get into it. First, I want to ask you a little bit about your background and your career. And if you think back to when you were a child or even young adult years, can you think about what kinds of careers you might have been thinking of or dreaming of?
Yes, I want it to be, quite literally, Indiana Jones. I thought he had the greatest life. He was smart but adventurous and got to see the world, and that was my dream.
That is very cool. And you didn't even think, hey, he's a guy. You just thought, I can do that job. Wow, that's so fun. It's interesting. What happened? What when you told people about that, what did they say?
Well, as a child, people were indulgent. I don't think they thought I meant it literally until maybe middle school, and then high school. And everyone's like, wait, what do you mean you want to be Indiana Jones? You want to be Harrison Ford? You want to be an actor? And I was like, no, I want to be like him, an explorer, an archaeologist.
And so, you have actually gone on adventures during your career, and we're going to talk about that. But you spent your formative years in Canada, right?
Yes, that's
So
correct.
tell us a bit about that, growing up in Canada.
Yeah, it's a lovely place, very outdoorsy. I didn't realize that until I moved to Japan, just how our school curriculum really does emphasize on being outdoors, and that kind of related to growing up and going out with friends too. And I don't mean outdoors like we're all campers or hikers. I mean just being outside and enjoying the sun and enjoying the fresh air and planning activities outside. Like even if it's like drawing outside or sitting outside on the curb with your friends and talking.
Yeah, it's so true, isn't it? Right? I think of New Zealand in that way as well. We'd sit outside and have our lunches, whereas when you think in Japan, they always sit inside no matter what and have their lunch, don't they? Their school lunch.
Right. And it seems a bit odd to just be outside on the street. It seems like loitering in Japan, right? But like where we're from, I think like it's more like a child activity. That's where you hang out. Where else would you go, right? But the front
Right, and why
lawn.
would you sit in the classroom when you're there the rest of your day? So it makes sense, but it's interesting how we've grown up in different environments to what is traditional in Japan. So when then did you come to Japan?
So I came to Japan the first time around right after I graduated university.
Right.
And I actually graduated right around the big housing crisis of 2008, 2009. There was no real jobs in North America because of the recession. So I decided to come to Japan and do what many people do, which is seek adventure through teaching English. And I did that for about a year and a half. Went back to Canada, start working at the banks, and then realized this isn't it for me, and then went to law school, and then came to Japan in 2017.
Oh, okay. So your undergrad was was not in law.
No, it wasn't actually. It was in political science and history, so quite
So with
different.
that in your hand, you came to Japan for your first adventure, as you call it, in teaching English. Went
Yes.
back then. So when did this come up for you to think about law? I've always wanted to know with you when you thought about becoming a lawyer or when it came up in your career and why you decided to go and study law.
Well, honestly, it was because I was working at the banks, and bankers work with in-house lawyers quite often. And I got to know a few of them, and I was telling them that I just couldn't see myself doing this for the rest of my life. I'm not very good with numbers. I don't like analyzing numbers and spreadsheets. And they asked me, what did I do as my undergraduate? And I said, political science. And that seems to be the default for a lot of Canadian lawyers. And they said, why don't you try law school? So I was like, okay.
So it ties in nicely with people doing political science first and then going on and doing law later.
Yeah, that seemed to be the case with a lot of the Canadian lawyers I met.
Interesting. Did you talk to any lawyers around that time who were in private practice, or was it really these people you're working with who were in-house?
It was mostly with in-house lawyers, and a few of them did have me speak to some private practice lawyers, their friends, their colleagues that they met through law school or the previous careers. And they set me up with an idea of what law school would be like. And I was like, okay, I'll try this then.
Good on you. I mean, when I thought about doing law, I thought it was quite scary. I was, who did law? Who were lawyers in my community? I didn't really have any role models or visuals of who they were, only people who were on TV and TV shows that were around lawyers. So how did you get yourself to just go with the flow and say, yeah, I'm going to do it? Sounds like you didn't maybe have such an apprehension about doing law itself.
So this is maybe one of my bad habits or bad traits. I don't give a lot of thought before I make major life decisions. It just sounded like a good idea at the time. The people I met were lovely people, and they seem to really enjoy their careers. So I was like, well, you know what? I don't want to be here, and that looks really good. So let's give it a go.
So how was it those years in law school?
Extremely intimidating, because I have been out of the student life for quite a few years already, maybe like 3, 4 years. So I had to get back into the habit of studying. And studying at law, like at law school, is quite different from undergraduate. It's quite a commitment. So that was when I was started thinking, did I do the wrong thing? Did I do the same thing I usually do and jump into things without thinking about it? And there's a lot of second guessing.
Right. And I think too, you when you've gone from working and receiving an income to going back to or starting being a student again, that's hard as well, isn't it? Not having the flexibility of just doing your job, going home and doing anything you wish. You've always got to study when you're a student.
It was really difficult because I did have to ask my parents for some help, like here and there. And that was also difficult too. It was an adjustment. And there were times where I was thinking, like, oh, what if this doesn't work out? And now I'm, in my late 20s and asking my parents for help. Like, how's that? How are they feeling? Is that a burden on them? So there's a little bit of pressure and a lot of like second guessing.
Right, I see. So how then was it as you moved your way through law school? Was it 2, 3 years, 4 years?
It's 3 years.
3 years, okay. And so you're getting towards the end, and but during that time, are you also talking again with those in-house lawyers that you met or any other lawyers to help you sort of solidify what you want to do when you graduate?
No, I actually unfortunately lost contact with those first couple of lawyers that pointed me on this path, partially because I ended up going to law school in America instead of staying in Canada. So I think that was part of it. I didn't quite reach out to anybody else while I was in law school. I was just really focused on academics there. We did have a great counselor and some alumni that we could talk to. And of course, the professors are there, but anyone outside of that network, no, not really.
Okay, so then you graduated, right? You've got
Yes.
through your first adventure doing law, and then what happened? What did you take as your next steps after that?
So, I decided I wanted to do pro bono, not pro bono, sorry, public service work.
Public service,
And
okay.
yes, so I looked at Atlanta and New York. I worked a little bit in Atlanta before I got barred, and I decided to sit for the New York bar instead because I thought that that would translate better if I were to move around back to Canada or internationally than a Georgia bar, just because like people sometimes do look at like cities that they know well, right? So I went to New York and then I looked into public service like legal aid or public housing. And then I suddenly had the urge to move to Japan.
We're going to come to that, but I'm wondering why you chose public service, because it's not, shall we say, regular or traditional or common perhaps, but this might be a thread through all of what you do. But interesting that it wasn't hardcore, deals or litigation or something like that. You chose public service and housing. What triggered you to do that?
I'm not quite sure. Maybe I just thought at that time I was like trying to link something to what my undergraduate studies were focused on. And my undergraduate studies in political science was really focused on refugees and displacement of women and children from war or like political asylum. So I think I just kind of wanted to try to work with something using that degree as well. Since when I was at the bank, obviously I had nothing to do with that, right? I was just a number cruncher, paper pusher. And I think that's where it came from.
Yeah, right, I see. But at the bank, you would have had the lack of that, obviously, the access to finance for such displaced people. And in a way, that ties in. Okay, so did you then work in that area before you came to Japan?
Briefly, not quite with women and children per se, or refugees even, because I realized afterwards when, again, this is my fault because I jump into things without planning, that most of those careers have professionals who have advanced degrees and dedicated their life to studying and researching these topics. So I looked elsewhere to other types of nonprofits. I worked for a little bit with a Lawyers for the Arts group, and then I looked at like local legal aid kind of groups. And then eventually I found a lawyer that used to work closely with my law school, who was working with research on women and children issues all over the world. And at that moment, she had a project in Africa, and she asked me if I would help her. And oddly enough, that was a remote position, and it was only part-time. So I was like, that sounds great. Let me try that. Let me try to, build a little bit of expertise on that, get some experience as well. And maybe that would be my way into public service.
Did you do that, end up doing that project then, helping her?
I did. And that's also what enabled me to move to Japan, because it was remote completely, because she was actually situated in Europe. And she didn't mind that I was in New York, and she really didn't mind if I moved to Japan as long as we were communicating. So yeah, I did do that for a little bit, and unfortunately, it wasn't a paid position. And eventually, she did ask if I was interested in a paid position. I would probably have to relocate to Europe, but that wasn't really on the table for me at that point. That was already when I was in Japan, so.
So how long did that project take then? So you're sort of straddling through being in New York, coming to Japan. We're getting to you coming to Japan. How long did that actual project last then? Was it a couple of years or something?
Yes, actually, it was off and on for about 2 years. Yeah, close to 2 years. Yes.
Okay, so when you're doing that, you're also a newbie lawyer, right? Working.
Yes.
So how was that those first few years then, right? You're in New York for a couple of years. So how does that work? What are some of the highs and lows and things that you loved about those first few years?
Well, what I loved was I was finally done with law school, so that was a big sigh of relief.
Yes, I know what that feels like. Hallelujah.
Right. I think all of us do. We all are just celebrating for the first 6 months after law school. We're just really glad it's over. That was one of the highs. And then one of the lows was probably just still second guessing and questioning myself, because I still hadn't really found a path, so to speak, like a career path. And I still wasn't really quite sure if what I was doing was what I should be doing or what I could be doing for the long term. So that was kind of the lows, just always in your own head.
How do you get out of your own head in that situation, and how do you move then to know what you should or could is probably a nicer word than should, isn't it? What
Yeah,
you
I think
could be
so.
doing. How's that transition happening then after you're thinking about this for a while?
Maybe this is how I end up transitioning to really different things. I think one of my go-to mechanisms, I guess, is escaping it. So instead of dealing with being in my own head and thinking about why am I thinking these things, I'm just thinking, okay, let's do something new. Let's keep myself busy, and hopefully things will work out. I don't recommend that path for everyone, but
It works for you.
yeah.
So how did
So
that work then? What was your go-to mechanism to escape at that point?
well, I was just thinking, like, well, what else can I be doing? Maybe I should just make myself busy with something else. And then I thought about maybe I should look for another job too, or move to a different city and experience something different. And that will keep my mind from overthinking of where I am right now. It sounds a little bit redundant when I say it out loud now, but.
I'm not sure. I think it's that awful word pivot that people use a lot now, right? But you can pivot suddenly or pivot gradually. I don't think it's one pivot in one particular way. It sounds like that's your mechanism, is to switch your atmosphere, switch your environment, switch whatever it might be to get yourself, moving into that next phase. And that sounds like it's sounded normal to me as you said it, actually. Keep busy and do other things. And meanwhile, you are actually still doing this part-time research and helping the woman who's doing the African study, right?
Yes, I am doing that. Yeah. You know what? I'm going to steal that from you. I really like how you phrased it. I always have a difficult time explaining myself, but I'm going to say I pivot.
Yeah, well, we own our stories, right? And pivoting, I read the other day, was that particular thing, is that some people pivot slowly, some, more 360 degrees quite gradually. So totally take it. And you know, you own your story, so you can, and we all can. It didn't sound like anything like that to me. I think escaping, people might think escaping and not dealing with it, but you're talking about you're still in that situation, but you're moving your mind to a different way of thinking. And I think that's a really good mechanism for people to use, actually.
I wish we can go back in time and I can say what you just said to my parents when I was explaining to them why I'm moving cities again. And that would have been a much easier conversation with them, I think.
You can always tell them. I mean, there's never a wrong time to reflect back and have a conversation with your parents. Actually, some people on the podcast here have had those conversations with family, after family have listened to them, actually,
Oh.
and they've both thought about things that happened in their past in a different way, or with a different view or a different understanding. And it's through chatting on the podcast and chatting later that they've found an understanding. So you never know, that might happen.
I love that idea of asking them to listen to this. I didn't even think
Yeah.
about
Oh,
that.
yes. Oh,
What?
yes. You've got to
Thanks
do
for that
that.
link.
And shout out to your parents, who I know will be listening right now. And so,
Hi,
yay.
Dad.
Let's think then. Where are you going to then? So you're thinking about all this sort of moving yourself, you know, keeping yourself busy,
Right.
shifting yourself. And so you literally do shift to another city. Yeah.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Wow.
Because I'm sure that's a big story.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun doing it. I don't recommend young lawyers taking the path I did if they are thinking about coming to Japan, because it was a little bit stressful. Because while I did shift cities, and after the first couple months of newness wore off, I was kind of in the same situation of what now? Where do I go? What do I do? Plus, it's a completely new environment. I mean, like the legal market here in Japan is completely different from what I'm used to in, say, New York, right? So I didn't factor that in either because no planning. It was a good learning experience, I think, overall, and definitely met some good friends along the way who randomly had moved to Japan for various reasons. And we ended up talking, and they were a great support group.
Now let's back up a bit though. How did you didn't just get on a plane and come to Japan. Did you have anything that you were coming to here? Did you have a job, or what did you actually have as your first plan being here? And I'm presuming that you also had the ability to come to Japan quite freely with your visa and things like that. Is that right?
Right, I have that. But I actually did, Catherine. I'm sorry to tell you this. I really did just
You
decide to
just
come
did.
here. Yeah, I didn't have a job lined up.
Wow. Okay, that's very exciting. Gosh, 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 gosh. That's an adventure and a half. So you really literally came to Japan and were hoping, like Harrison Ford, to find your adventure, right?
Yes, that
Wow.
was my little adventure, yes. I mean, I did have a little bit of a idea of what to do when I got here. Some of my other friends who relocated after law school to, let's say, Korea or England or Hong Kong, Singapore, did tell me that in Asia and Europe, people use recruiters that are headhunters. And that's not the case in America so much. It's a much more streamlined program. You go from law school, then either private practice or something else, and it's very structured. Where here you could try to find a job through a recruiting agency. So I had that in mind. I was like, okay, I'm going to get on a plane. I'm going to get to Japan. I'm going to relax for a month. And then I'm going to go find a recruiting agency and they're going to help me find this fabulous job. And then I don't have to think about anything. That was kind of my idea. And
And
then I realized it really wasn't that way.
what happened? How long did it take you to find a role, and what did you find one eventually? I think you did in-house, perhaps.
Yes. Eventually, I did. And a lot of the recruiters did tell me politely, but very nicely and firmly that I was a little bit naive to think that a junior lawyer coming straight to Japan with no law firm or in-house experience or lateral transfer could easily find a job in Japan. But they were willing to work with me. And luckily, I think this is what really helped me get my first job was because I do speak a bit of Japanese and I can read and write. So they were able to find companies that were willing to take a risk on junior lawyers and for the language skill for being able to communicate in both Japanese and English. And that's how I ended up at my first role.
And where was that?
That was at Sega Sammy Holdings.
Right. I heard SEGA stands for something like service, SE of service, and GA is for games. So they were games made for the servicemen from America in Japan. Did you hear that?
No, I didn't hear that.
Yeah,
I'll
like it
have to
was
look into
service
that.
people's games. So people who were here in the forces. Apparently that's where the name came from, but and I think Sammy might be from the a sort of part of the owner's name, but I might not be right there.
Right. Sega was actually acquired by Sammy in 2004.
Right.
Yeah, and Sammy is traditionally a pachinko gaming company, so completely separate worlds, and then they merged in that time.
Ah,
But I'm
right.
not sure where Sammy comes from either. It could actually, I think you might be right. It could be the founder's name or nickname.
Yeah, I think it's the nickname, perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah, because some people find his name a little tricky, perhaps, to say, and he's got this Sammy nickname.
Right. Yeah. So I think that really could does come from that.
Right.
Sega, I have no idea, actually. I need to look that
Yeah,
up.
apparently that's it. So I was doing my little research there and found that out. So interesting. You had this Sega take a chance on you. Do you remember that
Yes.
process there when you had that interview and thought this is going to be it and you got the job? What happened there? Tell me about that.
Sure. I actually thought I did not get the job. I thought I blew the interview and they were not interested. And I came out of the interview actually really, really down with myself and thinking maybe it's time to reassess when I should go home. And then spoke to my recruiter and he's like, "Are you crazy? You need to have a bit more confidence in how you sound." And you know what, Catherine? I feel like that's a recurring theme for a lot of female professionals, that we do second guess ourselves a lot and tend to default to the negative first.
Right.
Yeah, I've noticed that pattern quite a bit now since working. So yeah, they actually ended up taking a chance on me and bringing me on board. The gentleman who hired me was a great mentor. He's a Japanese lawyer as well as a New York and California attorney. So I felt he really could help train me because he understood both systems and he came up in the same system I did legally.
Ah, so you sort of had a similarity there, and he perhaps took you under his wing. And
Right.
then, did you know he was a mentor then, or is it looking back, you know he was a mentor?
Looking back, actually.
Right,
Yeah.
yeah. Are you still
Yeah.
in touch now?
No, we're not. He got quite busy. Unfortunately, after a few years working with him, the entire company had restructuring and then all the legal people got shifted. And he's actually a quite senior executive and he got shifted to a different project completely.
Right. How
Yeah.
was he a mentor for you? In what way? What does a mentor do to help you?
Well, he was there every day pretty much by phone because he was working in different cities flying around. But he was really available to speak about anything, really available to review anything I had, whether something small like an email, updating like a external partner, or like something much bigger like a drafting of a contract. And looking back now, I really do appreciate the time he took to do all those little things, like the little edits that at that time I just thought was I just took for granted. Like this is just what people do. But now I can reflect and see like, no, he was a really busy guy and he really did make time to do those little things and talk to me about things.
That's really fabulous, isn't it?
Yeah.
You should let him know you're on this podcast too, and shout out to him too, for helping you in those stages, because we often need, there's often somebody there in our orbit, but we don't always notice them until a bit later. I
Yeah.
certainly had a similar person, but I didn't notice that person until later and thought, you were that North Star guiding me. Interesting.
I think that happens to us quite a lot, especially when we're seeking that guidance. We're just a little bit, we're so lost in our own little path that when we're seeking that guidance, we're not aware when that guidance appears, right? It's really when things are calmer, we're a little bit more settled, and then we have time to breathe, and we're like, oh, actually.
Yeah, we notice it later.
Yeah, so you're
So,
right. I do need to give him a big thank you and shout out later on. So,
he'd be really happy about that. What then in those days then? Again, I'll ask that same question about your highs and lows of that work here in Japan, your first job that you've landed here. and some of the things again that you loved and the challenges at that time.
I think one of the obvious challenges was business cultural differences, as well as language differences. So my Japanese is not native fluent. It's better than most, I guess, expats who come here on a first year and are learning. I'm better than that. I can read and write, but it's nowhere near native. So having to learn Japanese greetings on emails, as well as speaking to people, that was actually the bulk of my first half year. That made me question if I really made the right decision, because it didn't seem like I was working in law. I was just like, oh, okay, I'm just writing emails and talking to people in meetings, but I'm not, as a junior lawyer, you get in your head, you think, oh, a lawyer means drafting contracts all the time, right? Or negotiating. And so the first 6 months, that wasn't the case. So I was really wondering what it was I doing. But then I realized that I was learning. It was like, I can't even remember the aha moment, but I had an aha moment where somebody else came to me and asked me something, and I was able to just like explain what the project was and what we were doing and who the people that they should talk to were. And I was just like, oh, wait, I am doing something. I'm not just a cog in the machine.
You're an important cog, right? And that's, I think, we do have that aha moment. And so much of law, so-called law work in your first years is absolutely nothing to do with the law. You might, for example, for me, going into court here and there, and I'd think, oh, now I'm a lawyer. But everything you do is about it. And it does actually lead to becoming a great lawyer. Like you just said, you knew the project members, you knew how to explain it, you could introduce people to the right people who they needed to speak to. And that's all part of, I think, lawyers' work is to coordinate in that way.
Definitely. I realize now that like a major part of whether private practice or in-house lawyers is project management
For sure,
and
definitely.
managing expectations. And I didn't realize that's what I was learning. And a lot of learning I realized too is through osmosis. And but because when you're in it, you don't realize, because coming out of school, you're kind of structured. You're thinking like, okay, today I'm learning. Today I have homework. This is what I'm doing. But when you're working, it's not like that. No one's going to tell you, hey, Andrew, I'm teaching you something. This is what you're learning now. Or hey, this is work related. Please pay attention. Like nobody gives you that guidance, right? So you just think you're doing all these things that are meaningless, and you don't realize that, oh no, this is part of it. This is part of the bigger picture. I just don't see the bigger picture yet.
Yeah, that's right. And we're seeing the little trees, not the whole forest.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting, right? So from in-house there at that role, you then jumped into private practice, I believe. And let's
Yes.
just say that's not the path that many people are adventurous enough to take. So usually people take the other way, which is private practice to in-house. So I'm really curious what led you to go then to do a private practice role.
Yeah, sure. So, because there was some restructuring at Sega, and my mentor got moved to a different project, which is a great project, but it took up all his time. I felt like I wasn't getting the guidance I needed to grow. At this point, I was maybe like 3.5 years out, maybe 3 years out of law school, so still quite junior. And I realized that Sega was giving me a lot of opportunity, a lot of projects to work on and take the lead. But it scared me a little. I didn't want to be the person who was taking the lead but pointing the ship in the wrong direction. And I thought I needed to go and really look for another mentor, so to speak. And where else do you look for mentors but, like a private practice, a bunch of lawyers who are well seasoned, right, with a lot of experience. So that's what led me to look at private practice.
All right, so you didn't think about, oh, I haven't been practice private practice before. Nothing sort of crossed your mind there. It sounds like a theme that's coming through for you is that you just thought, well, I need that, so I'm going to go and get it.
Oh
Yeah,
yeah.
that's brilliant. And then you t did you talk to the same recruiter again?
Actually, no, somebody else found me, a very lovely recruiter, and she was a lawyer in Australia, and then she came to Japan, and then she became a legal recruiter for a boutique legal services company. So she helped me find this current position at Kaelin Gates, and really appreciate her for that too. Because again, I felt like she was taking a chance too upon meeting me and just hearing my background. Because sometimes, law firms are a little bit picky about the path their lawyers or the candidates take. And since mine was clearly not the normal path, and I transitioned quite a lot from place to place, it could be a risk for certain firms, but she took a chance on me and introduced me to Kaelin Gates. And here we are now.
Here you are. And do you remember the interview process and how, what interest that the firm took in your past when you were being interviewed?
Yeah, surprisingly, they liked the fact that I took these, what do we call it earlier, pivots? They actually were interested in that, and they thought it was great to hear that I just went head in, just dove right in.
See?
Yeah, so.
See? So this is actually really great for you to hear this and hear yourself saying this too, is that those pivots were in fact not random. Perhaps they felt like it, but in fact they were all meant to be. And there you go, the firms found that interesting in your path, which is a really important point that you've brought out. So what do you love about your work now? What do you find satisfying and rewarding and that you're really proud of? Big question,
Wow.
big question.
Big question. Actually, I really do love my work right now. I feel I am being challenged every single day. Not to say I wasn't in Sega, but it's right now, like I really feel like I'm being pushed by all these, like my peers, the partners, everyone's challenging me every single day. I love that part. I love that I'm continually learning. And one of the greatest parts about being here too is that I've learned, even though I'm a lawyer myself, I had a lot of stereotypes about other lawyers, right? Especially lawyers from certain career paths would be like. And I am very happy to say that being here has dispelled me all those stereotypes. Everybody here has been very warm, supportive. What they tell you in law school, they're really going to be unapproachable people and you can't talk to them. They're very scary and you better know the law to the T before you talk to them. None of them are like that. They're very warm, and it's a very teaching atmosphere here, I feel. So I enjoy it.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Wow, so good. And so, how many years there now have you been in Japan?
I think about 5 years,
Five,
maybe.
okay.
Or six. I'm not sure. I'm losing track a little bit.
Wow, amazing. Okay, finish this sentence for me. The most important thing I have learned from my career in law so far is.
Is to ask questions, but bring some solutions as well.
Tell me more.
So I think we're trained and also taught in school to always not be afraid to ask questions when you don't know. But then you get into the bad habit of not thinking about the question when you come across something that's completely new. And you're just like, okay, I'll just ask a more senior attorney, or I'll ask a partner, or I'll ask somebody else who's done this project before. But once you hear the answer like that, you're never going to remember it and you're never really going to learn or apply it properly. But I think if you think about the question you have and try to envision what you think the solution might be, and then go ask the person, like, hey, I have this question. I don't really understand the situation, but I think it might be like this. So, do we do A or do we do B, or is it something completely different like a C? Then you'll get an answer and you'll get a better conversation too, I find. Because people, I think they respond better too. They realize that you're thinking about it. You're not just going to them and asking them to do the work for you.
How did you work out that giving a solution or solutions, possible solutions, was the way? Was there somewhere there that you didn't do that and somebody said, don't just come to me with your problems. Tell me what I should be doing. Or was there something like that, or did you figure it out somehow?
I think it was actually when somebody else, a little bit slightly more junior than me, came to me and asked me a question. And I, in my head, I didn't say this to this person, but I got frustrated, like, oh, didn't you think about this first? Then I was like, oh my God, I do that too all the time. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
So it was one of those type of moments. It was a little bit of both,
Like
like,
a
oh.
reverse mentoring. You're like, oh my God, I do that too. So,
Yeah.
very interesting. Really great information there. Thank you so much. And I think also we can't really talk about Andrea unless we talk about what you do outside of the law, but it's related to the law.
Mm-hmm.
You do lots of volunteering, and you have done beforehand, before coming here too, supporting and engaging those people who have had discrimination or exclusion, lacking the access to resources. And I think you did some work back in Toronto. Have I said that right?
Yes.
Toronto, like you say that. Toronto, as we say in New Zealand, but back in your home country. And then I think also some work that you were doing when you were at Arts New York. Tell us a bit more about that and why you got that interest in volunteering and how it sort of relates now, because I know you're also signed up as a volunteer for Women in Law Japan. Yay. And you are doing
Yay.
that. So tell us what it is that drives you to that, and would you recommend that for other lawyers to be thinking about to volunteer their time?
First, definitely, I recommend it. I recommend it not just to lawyers, but to everyone and anyone. I think it's a great use of time to help out. You do learn a lot about yourself, aside from learning about other people that you inherently meet in these types of ventures. And what drove me to volunteering and participating in these, I think it was actually a conversation I had with my mother when I was really in maybe like middle school, going into high school, and I threw a temper tantrum because I couldn't get what I wanted. I can't even remember what it was, but I just got really mad. And then my mother just basically, she set me straight and just like, you don't even know how good you have it. And that's basically how I got into thinking about, oh, there's other people that maybe need some help too. I don't know if that's quite the answer you're looking for.
No,
I
it
didn't
is.
really
It's
think
great,
about
isn't
it
it?
too much,
Sometimes it
but
comes from a place where we don't even expect it. And your mum sort of said, you don't know the half of it, how good you've got it. It's a difference between someone saying that and you connecting that to doing something about it.
I think she actually pushed me to do my first volunteer work. I can't even remember what it was. It might have been something through like the school or something, you know, like in schools always organize something, right? Like go and help collect canned goods or something like that. Like I think she signed me up for that and pushed me to do that. You know, the funny thing is at that moment, I remember being very, very upset about not getting what I want, but I don't remember what I wanted. I don't remember what the fight was about. Yeah. And now I just feel really embarrassed. Like I remember feeling very ashamed now, like about, oh, I can't believe I was such a brat then.
Oh, we're children, right? We hardly know anything, but interesting that it didn't just end there, that it took you somewhere further. And during your volunteering, what have you actually learned then about yourself?
It took a while to really embrace wanting to volunteer and help people. I think in the beginning, I was really just going through the motions. Like understanding that and seeing that, I think that's what I learned. I think like learning to self-reflect a bit more deeply, if that makes sense, like having to recognize why I do something or don't do something. That's been one of the processes that I've learned through volunteering.
And you would recommend it to other lawyers to volunteer their time,
Yeah,
yeah? And other
definitely.
people generally, yeah?
Yes, definitely. I mean, part of it is learning self-reflection, but the other part is obviously is learning about other people's lives, right? And other cultures too as well. 'Cause you do meet other volunteers or the people you're working with or it just the environment you're in, it just really opens up your doors to different views.
What are you enjoying now then, working with Women in Law Japan? Can I ask?
Yes, of course. No pressure. Yeah, I think one of the best things about Women in Law Japan is again meeting different people and just learning and listening to different people's lives and motivations for coming to Japan or volunteering. And you know, it has a little bit of a humbling effect because it reminds you that, you know, yes, you are your own narrative and your story, but the world is not built around you. You are part of that world.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I
Absolutely.
do love that. I love remembering that and reminding myself and being reminded by the women that like we are part of a community and we're not an island by ourselves. Like I know that's a bit cheesy, but
No, it's true though, right? And with that group, you've got all people with all different pressures and abilities and time that expands, and other people who don't have time. And it's just an interesting concept, right? When you're working all as the same lawyer, shall we say, but all doing different things in that place. I think that's great. Well, thank you for that, because I'm certainly not the owner of Women in Law Japan. I'm just a facilitator, but I love seeing how everybody interacts and the pieces come together, and that's really fun. And I think you're right, the humbling effect is really important about volunteering, and you know that the world does not revolve around you, that others need your help. I actually feel volunteering is a place you can actually find your superpower.
Oh, wait, explain. That's really
Because I wrote
interesting.
that down as you were talking.
Really?
The way that you can help people, you find out that is the way that you interact with others, and the way that you can guide them or inspire them is actually the place that you can find that's one of your superpowers, that you can help people do that. And a superpower is not something that you can say turn water into wine, right? It's not like that.
Right.
It's a very innate
Right.
thing that is just actually part of you that you underrate, that you never really thought about, but it's actually the thing that helps other people, and not everybody's got it. That's a superpower, I feel.
I love that. Can you please bring that to our next event or meeting and explain that to the rest of the group? I think everybody would love to hear that, and I think everybody would love to, self-recognize and be like,
Yeah.
okay.
Yeah, exactly. I will do that, I promise. All right. Anything else you wanted to talk about around volunteering?
Do it, everybody. Anybody
Okay.
who's listening, do
All right.
it.
And anything else then, in your opinion, what are things that are, you know, really, really important as personalities or strengths as lawyers that we need to be, you know, doing or having or cultivating? And I'm really asking you this question for those lawyers or young lawyers or students who are coming up in the ranks, what you think would be the advice for them to sort of try and cultivate as they're coming through.
Yeah, I think listening, that's something that's really important in law school or any professional school. We're really taught to put yourself out there and really advocate for yourself in terms of skills and what you want to do, which is great and what we need to continue doing. But I think sometimes along the way, we forget to listen. And that's a skill that we end up having to relearn once we're working.
Brilliant. And what's one big piece of advice that you'd offer up for young people thinking like you were coming to Japan to do a law career?
Do more research than I did. No, but seriously, maybe reach out to some people who are actually in Japan first, going through LinkedIn or their alumni associations and hearing about their past and seeing if there's maybe something through their schooling or maybe their existing work that can help them with getting their foot in the door first. I do think the thing that set me up for success was probably I did have some language skills. So some people who don't have those language skills, definitely, I'm not saying learn Japanese in like 6 months, but more so do some research with who you may already know that's in Japan, connect with them first and see if they can give you some more guidance and advice.
Brilliant. Any career advice then for women lawyers in particular?
Yes, actually, stop doubting yourself. We tend to always think the negative first coming out of an interview, or we reread our emails like 10 times, where else it may be a male counterpart may not. They just shoot the email off. They won't doubt themselves as much. So I think for female lawyers, just be a bit more brave. I don't mean to be overconfident, right? But don't be arrogant, but just be a bit more brave and you have this, you got this. Just give it a go. Just try.
Great. Have you got younger lawyers in your firm that you are also able to tell them these kinds of things?
Our office actually right now has not that many associates, so I don't have that opportunity in our firm. Do you have one or two friends from my volunteering days in New York and Georgia, and they're thinking about law school and one's in law school, so we do have these conversations. And
Great.
actually, Ramade Fields was kind enough to speak to one of them for so
Great.
shout out to another woman in Law Japan.
Exactly. Aramide, back in the early days of this podcast, nearly 2 years
Yes.
ago, talked about those things. Oh, that's
Yeah.
brilliant to hear. Lovely. Wow. Okay. Then, just as we're winding up, a couple of things there about future of law, what your ideas and thoughts might be as you see in your field or in general in law in the next few years or so.
I think the future of law is going to incorporate more technology, especially AI. I think a lot of people right now are worried that there's going to be all these AI programs, ones that are already out, that's going to replace lawyers. I don't think that's the case. I think it's more about lawyers having to learn how to use these new tools to better their practice. So I think there will be a little bit of an upheaval, but I mean, it's probably the same as back when people were introduced to from typing on typewriters to using a word processor, right? Like, I think it's just one of those transitions, or billing instead of by hand and using a program. It's just going to be a bit of an upheaval for like a year or two, and then everybody will forget about the whole fuss and just move on with the new technology.
Okay, that's interesting. I've seen so many graphics or pictures of robots with wigs on, lawyers' wigs or judges' wigs, and it's quite crazy some of the things you're seeing right now. But it really is the human side of lawyering that I don't think can be taken away by AI
No.
or tech, but I agree with you with it being a tool to help us practice better because we can be quite inefficient as lawyers. And so anything that brings in efficiencies, I think, is a brilliant thing.
Right. It's kind of like, when the internet was late 1990s, when everybody was like, oh my God, what is this? This is completely useless. Or and then there's some people who are like, oh, this is going to take over the world and like put people out of jobs. But here we are now, 2023, and it's just part of our daily lives, part of our work. It's a tool we use. And I think that's just really what AI technology would be in the legal field. It's the same thing. People are just a little bit fearful and just thinking it's going to replace them, which, like you said, it wouldn't happen because we need that human touch. So I think it's just more about us growing and readapting to new technology. We can't turn away from it, right?
Even Chat GPT, is that right? I don't even think it's getting to the human side of things yet. So,
Right,
yeah.
right.
And one other question I have for you is if you're doing a project of some sort and you could remove all the barriers or constraints from that project, what would you do or want to be known by having done this project?
Maybe creating like a STEM program, but for law, but for girls, if that makes sense. I don't really know how to verbalize it, but but yeah, you know how they have like all these like STEM curriculums and retreats and all these activities and education paths for children, especially girls. I think if I could set up something like that for female students, especially starting from a young age, to get interested in the law, that's probably what I would want to do.
Right, so STEM for law.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. I like that idea. Ooh, sounds interesting. We might have to talk about that again sometime. All right, well, I'm going to then wind down the conversation with the Super Six. This is a kind of
Okay.
lighter note, a quick fire round of questions. And I've
Okay.
swapped them out a little bit this time.
Oh
They're
no.
more, no, they're more Japan-centric, so they should be fine. They're really,
Okay.
really easy. You can tell me, we can cut things later if they're not.
All right.
What is your favorite Japanese food and where can I get it from?
Oh wow. Sushi at Yamasato. It's sushi restaurant in the Okura Hotel in I think it's Akasaka or Toramon Hills, like around that area.
Whoa, nice suggestion. See, you know Japan, you know Tokyo. What's the place in Japan that you most recommend people go to if they're coming over here to visit?
Sapporo in
Why?
Hokkaido
Why?
in any season. Their food is great. They have great people, energy. The city's smaller than Tokyo, so it's especially as a first time exploring, I think it's wonderful. You still get that city feel, but it's a bit more manageable, especially with the transportation. But the food is absolutely the best. Love Hokkaido food.
Good one. Okay, well, what's one thing you really love about Japan?
One thing I really love about Japan, safety. I think every woman can relate to this. Just being able to walk out on the street unbothered at any time of day or night is fantastic.
Absolutely. I would have put that at the top as well.
Right. And you know, just simple things like going into the train station without having to look over my back to see if someone's following me down the steps, like stuff like that. It's wonderful. I don't have to do that here. Love
That's
it.
so true. Okay. What's your favorite saying in either Japanese or English?
My favorite saying. You might have to censor me.
Okay, I'm holding my breath.
I swear a lot. It's a response. It's a knee-jerk response.
Okay.
The F word for everything, whether it's excitement, happiness, frustration. That's probably my favorite. I drop the F bomb quite frequently.
Okay.
I
Okay, please don't do it at our next event though, right?
won't. I promise I
Okay.
won't.
Okay, that's interesting. I wouldn't have known that about you. And then the fifth question is sharing with us, please, a book that you're reading or have read recently that you recommend.
Oh, okay. Yeah, actually, part of a book club out here in Japan, and they recommended a book for us to read, which I think is fantastic. It's called An Immense World by Ed Yang. It's nonfiction, and it really guides you into thinking about the animal world and how their experiences and perspectives is different from us, how they sense things or see things or how they go through lives. And it's just incredibly interesting. And it's really palatable. They don't write it in like a scientific document kind of way. They write it in a way for just your everyday reader.
Oh, sounds interesting.
Yeah, great
Okay,
book.
we'll pop that in the show notes. And final question is, what's something about you that a lot of people don't know? Perhaps what you just said is question four, your answer or favorite saying. But other than that, what is something about you that a lot of people don't know?
Yeah, I actually am really, really bad with time management on a personal level. With work or commitments like this, like being on the podcast, I'm great. But when it's my personal life, if I have to go meet a girlfriend or my husband or somebody, I'm always late. I don't know why. I'm always perpetually texting the other person who's waiting for me. Sorry, 5 minutes away, 15 minutes away. I have no idea why.
They probably already do know that about you, actually.
Yeah, they probably know, but like my colleagues or my friends from my professional groups, they might not notice that because I try to be on time by being aggressively early.
Got it. Got it. Well, Andrea, we have come to the end of our chat today. I thank you so much for coming on the Lawyer on Air podcast. It was such a pleasure to speak with you and connect in this way. I learned so much. Thank you.
No, thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun.
I
Bit
told
nervous
you it
to
would
see
be
you in
fun, didn't
person.
I?
Yeah.
And so, for listeners who are interested in connecting and learning from you and the things that you've said today, where's the best place to reach out to you?
LinkedIn would probably be the best. Yes.
Okay, great. We'll put that into the show notes too. And to everyone listening, if you enjoyed this episode and it inspired you in some way, please do subscribe. And we'd love to hear about it and hear about your biggest takeaway. Head on over to Apple Podcasts, leave us a review, and you can also go onto our website and leave a voice or text review. And so please do go ahead and share this episode with someone you think would enjoy listening and be inspired to lead a lawyer extraordinaire life. That's all for now today. Thank you, and we'll see you in the next episode. Cheers, kanpai, and bye for now. Thank you so much for listening today to this episode of Lawyer on Air. I really hope that you were inspired by the story you heard and that you discovered something new about women in the law. Please subscribe to the show so that you don't miss future episodes. And if you can think of even just one person to share this episode with, that would make my day. I invite you to connect with me to talk more. Jump on over to LinkedIn or Instagram where you can find me, or send me a message via my website contact page. That's all from me today. I look forward to seeing you right here on the next episode of Lawyer on Air. Cheers, kanpai, and bye for now.